Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
On a cultural crusade all across America, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. In this greatest season of the entire year. At least that's the way most of us feel about the holiday season. But how did that holiday season, this holiday season, get to be so great? What about some of those items every year in this winter season of magic and joy and rejoicing? Items that we all take for granted. Music that you hear in elevators or department stores or at home listening with friends and family. What about the entertainments, the movies that you see time after time every holiday season? What about the most famous Christmas story of them all? Where do these things come from? Well, there are fascinating accounts behind each of them, and those accounts will be brought to light. Even some material you probably never heard before in this special broadcast, The Secret History of the Christmas Holiday. And there is so much music, so much art, so many details that enrich the Christmas season that it's hard to center, to focus on just one or two or three or four items. But there is one inevitable choice, one particular Christmas carol, one particular song that hasn't been around forever. It's only been around since 1818. But since that time, it has become the most beloved, the most famous, the most celebrated Christmas carol of them all. Behind Silent Night, in its original German version, it's Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht, Silent Night, Holy Night. That story has captured the imagination of the whole world precisely because it seems so appropriate, so much in line with the story behind Christmas itself. The story behind Christmas itself is a story of a poor child who's born, after all, in a barn. That's what a manger is. Who goes on to change the entire course of human history. And the story of Stille Nacht, of Silent Night, is a story of a song composed under the most obscure and humble circumstances that has swept all the way around the world and become one of the most beloved melodies, one of the most beloved compositions in the history of music, so much so that some people have tried to suggest it was actually written by a famous composer, rather than being written as it was by two people, both of whom were poor, little known, obscure. The story behind Silent Night, of course, begins on Midnight Mass, Christmas Eve, 1818. In a tiny little village church in Oberndorf, Austria. The congregation, which wasn't that big, listened to a brand new carol that had been composed, the words by the assistant pastor of that church, Father Josef Mohr, and the choir director, Franz Xaver Gruber, had written the music. And together, they performed this song for the first time. Not with an organ playing in the background, but with Father Mohr, who had written the words, playing the guitar. And on each of the six verses, the choir repeated the last two lines in four-part harmony. Now, nobody knew at this point that the song was going to be world famous, though apparently the congregation liked it, people liked it, people talked about it in surrounding villages. There have been all kinds of bizarre stories that have been made up about Silent Night. I mean, there's a common story that mice had eaten the bellows of the organ so that they had to use a guitar instead of using an organ as they normally would. Well, that doesn't appear to be true. Other people say that Father Mohr had to write the words to the song in a hurry because the organ was broken and it wouldn't play. Well, we know that's not true because he'd actually written the words 2 years before and had carried them around with him, was waiting to see them set to music. There's even a film in the 1980s that was done for Austrian television that had a whole plot surrounding the composition of Silent Night, a plot involving railroad barons, evil railroad barons, of course, in contemporary movies. Anybody who's in industry or commerce is going to be evil. And there's a double-dealing priest and all kinds of adventures. There are even some accounts that place a zither instead of a guitar in the hands of Franz Gruber and somehow connect Joseph Moore, the priest who wrote the song, with some fire that engulfed his hometown of Salzburg. Now, none of this is true. What's true is simple but amazing. Father Moore was 24 years old, and he was in another parish, he was in another village church, when he wrote this song. And he wrote the original six stanzas, he wrote the words, and nobody knows why, nobody knows how. Some people speculate that he might have written the words, or they might have come to him while he was walking to visit his grandfather, who lived nearby, in this remote area of Austria, not very well settled, heavily settled at all. But in any event, he moved a couple of years later to Oberndorf, and there he met a school teacher, this local school teacher, and a rather talented guy, Franz Gruber. Franz Gruber wrote the music, and they performed the song. Now, Father Moore, who wrote this music, died very poor. He was born very poor. He was born in Salzburg in 1792. He died in 1848. And his entire life, whatever he earned, he always gave away for the education of children or caring for old people in the area. There's a school named in his honor that's a few yards from his grave, the Joseph Moore School. And the inscription on his grave describes him as a reliable friend of mankind toward the poor, a gentle, helping father. Yeah, but he's also somebody who wrote one of the most famous songs ever composed. So how did that happen? How did that come about? Well, it turns out that just a couple of years after the composition of Silent Night, there were two traveling families of folk singers from the Ziller Valley. And if you want to get the idea of what they were like, think the Trapp family singers in The Sound of Music. Same country, Austria, same idea, a group of family singers who went around and sang, and they got copies of this song, or they learned about the song, and started traveling around and performing it. The first big performance that we know about was in Leipzig in Germany in December of 1832, and then later, not too much later, in 1839, one of these traveling families performed the song for the first time in America at the Alexander Hamilton Monument, outside Trinity Church, right in Lower Manhattan near Wall Street. Meanwhile, just a few years later, in the 1840s, the song was heard by the King of Prussia, the most influential monarch in Central Europe, King Frederick William IV of Prussia, and he loved it, and he had it sung for him over and over and over again. By this time, the song had become famous throughout Europe, and Joseph Moore had died. And nobody knew anything about the composer. Franz Gruber wrote to music authorities in Berlin saying, wait a minute, this song that everybody's performing in Berlin and Vienna and all over the continent of Europe is my song. But everybody else had reported it was a work of Haydn or Mozart or even Beethoven. And even into the 20th century, you will find people who attributed the melody to Silent Night to one of those famous composers instead of the village school teacher. The controversy was put to rest in the 1970s, when a long-lost arrangement of Stille Nacht in the handwriting of Joseph Moore was authenticated. And right up there in the upper right-hand corner of the arrangement, Moore wrote the words, Melodie von Franz Xaver Gruber. So Gruber wrote the thing. The entire story is remarkable because you're talking about two people who lived apparently saintly, humble lives, enriched the world with an inspiring work of art, but never particularly benefited from it. Now, the next Christmas icon, the next item of Christmas tradition that people love, is not quite as moving, as important, as inspiring as Silent Night, but it's nearly as famous, at least in the United States. We'll tell you about Jingle Bells and more on this special broadcast.
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now offering a BOGO extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and yes, so much more. Just go to the Radio Listeners Specials page at MyPillow.com and use the promo code MEDVED. That's MyPillow.com, promo code MEDVED, or call 1-800-320-6280. That's 800-320-6280. Don't miss this incredible BOGO extravaganza at MyPillow.com. Buy one, get one free on select products. Remember, that's promo code MEDVED or 1-800-320-6280.
We've all heard the saying, safety in numbers. Well, think again. The IRS, the country's powerful tax collection agency, is on a hiring spree. They're bringing in 87,000 new agents. Now, no taxpayer at any income level is entirely safe from IRS scrutiny or, worse, a dreaded IRS audit. This is Michael Medved for AmFed Coin and Bullion. How safe are your accumulated savings and wealth from government examination and reach? Owning gold and silver is one of the best ways to keep your wealth in your own hands. Precious metals provide a layer of privacy that's not available through a bank account. When you own precious metals, only you and your dealer have knowledge of your purchase. Now, I buy all of my precious metals from my friend Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. Nick's been in this industry for 41 years, and he has established a reputation built on trust, transparency, integrity, and fair pricing. Call Nick and his team, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen
Come
here.
Come on, lady. Get a move
Goodness.
On. Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa. Don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Boy, they did a beautiful wedding.
Oh, yes, and they made such a lovely couple.
Excuse me, is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the
hey,
group?
Now, you cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
He hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop the senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
On this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, The Secret History of the Christmas Holiday, nearly everybody knows Silent Night, of course, and nearly everybody knows Jingle Bells, a rather different song, a song with no religious meaning at all. It's, after all, not really a Christmas song. It's a song about a sleigh ride. And lots of people like to attribute that song to a respected clergyman named John Pierpoint, who happened to be a longtime Unitarian minister in Medford, Massachusetts. But unfortunately, he didn't write it. His son did. And his son, well, his son was a rather strange guy, one of those American stories of somebody who was very bright, had a lot to offer, but never made anything of himself and died impoverished. His son was James Lord Pierpont. The best we know about the origins of the song is when he was 10 years old in 1832, his parents sent him away to school in New Hampshire, and there's a letter preserved that he wrote to his mom about riding in a sleigh through the December snow. And that experience apparently ended up inspiring this.
Dashing through the snow.
James Lord Pierpont carried this song around with him for years and years. After he went to school at age 10, he ran away from school when he was 14 and went away to sea. Then he followed the gold rush to California, didn't discover any gold. Eventually, he found his way to the American South. He fell in love with a southern girl in Savannah. And because he was a bright and ambitious and energetic guy, he ended up marrying this daughter of the local mayor in Savannah, Georgia. Now, one of the things about Savannah, Georgia is there's not a lot of snow at Christmas time. It's not that kind of climate. It's not like the New England, like Massachusetts, that James Lord Pierpont left. And there's a story that he sang this song to one of the local ladies playing it at the piano, and she was so taken with it, and his wife was so taken with it, that in 1857, she was able to persuade him to get the song published. It was published as a one-horse open sleigh. 2 years later, 1859, right before the war between the states, it was reprinted with the title Jingle Bells or the One Horse Open Sleigh. The song was popular. As a matter of fact, Pierpont continued to write music. Some of the music was meant to support the Confederacy, because since he was from Massachusetts, but he was living in Savannah, he was a strong supporter of the Confederate cause. He enlisted in the Confederate Army. He wrote three Confederate songs, Our Battle Flag, Strike for the South, and We Conquer or Die. But after the war, he ran a hardware business. He went out of business. He lost all his money. His son tried to get the copyright back for Jingle Bells in 1880 and failed. And he died poor in 1893, but everybody knows his work. What they don't know are some of the other verses, because there are a total of four verses of Jingle Bells. People only know the first verse. For instance, the second verse goes, a day or two ago, I thought I'd take a ride, and soon Miss Fanny Bright was seated by my side. The horse was lean and lank. Misfortune seemed his lot. He got into a drifted bank, and we got upsot. You can understand why people don't learn the other verses. As far as Jingle Bells is concerned, that song obviously was a big success, but not a success for James Lord Pierpont. I'll tell you what was a success for its author is a later song, a song from 1939, a song called Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Now, the origins here are with a department store. Appropriately enough, since department stores are so much a part of contemporary Christmas. In 1939, there was an employee, and not even a high-ranking employee, of Montgomery Ward Department Store. His name was Robert L. May, and he wrote a story poem in the tradition of The Night Before Christmas. And it's all about this young reindeer who's taunted and shunned by all the other reindeer because he has his glowing nose, but then he can get Santa's sleigh through the fog, and he gets to be appreciated. It's a great American story. What happened is he wrote this for his kids, and he showed it to some of his fellow employees, and Montgomery Ward distributed it free as sort of a bonus for people who were shopping there in the Christmas of 1939. They gave out over 3.5 million copies. They gave out 3.5 million copies in 1946 after giving out 2.5 million copies the year that May wrote it in 1939. And then at that point, Sewell Avery, who was the chairman of Montgomery Ward, felt sorry for the employee, Robert May, who had written this poem. So he gave the copyright back to May, who had six kids to put through college and had a sick wife. May then turned around, sold the rights to a children's book publisher. In 1947, Rudolph came out as a children's book, sold 100,000 copies in 2 years, which is a good sale. And then in 1949, a friend of his named Johnny Marks set the poem to music, made up a 113-word song based on the Rudolph story, which Gene Autry recorded.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose.
Gene Autry, famous as a star of movies, famous as a singing cowboy, later famous as a big-time media executive and even a baseball team owner, sold 2 million copies of his smash hit song, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, in the very first season. In subsequent years, there were more than 500 different Rudolph products that were licensed, from cookie cutters to cuckoo clocks, you name it. Maybe even you had some of them when you were a little kid. The Rudolph song and story has been translated into 25 languages. Network television has produced various animated versions, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, of course, has become an almost inevitable part of the Christmas holiday. But there have been other contributions in popular culture, including another song that's even more powerful and more popular. And that was a song that came out just 3 years after the original Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer poem was written. It came out in 1942. It came out at the perfect time, with America at war, to appeal to the nostalgic yearnings of the American people for a happier time, a more peaceful time, a less torn and dangerous time. The song White Christmas, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, doesn't mention anything specifically religious, and like Jingle Bells, and yet somehow captures some of the spirit, some of the deeper themes of a holiday. What are they? We'll talk about it and more, and other elements that are essential artistic contributions to the Christmas season coming up.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Secret History of Christmas. For more history shows, go to medvedhistorystore.com.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. A huge accident has closed a major highway in the upper Midwest. Correspondent Rich Johnson has the details.
The Ohio Turnpike is blocked in both directions near Sandusky because of a pileup involving as many as 50 vehicles. Local TV stations are reporting at least one fatality. Social media pictures show crumpled semis, cars on top of one another, others on their sides or on their tops. The Ohio Turnpike is a 240-mile-long toll road running along the northern edge of Ohio.
A major storm system continues to impact much of the nation. As a result, winter weather watches and warnings are in effect from coast to coast. The holidays aren't stopping rolling layoffs at Twitter. A former Twitter employee told CNN the layoffs saw the company's public policy team whittled down to about 15. There used to be over 60 employees in that division. Dave Collins, USA News.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
What you're hearing on this special edition of the Michael Medved Show is perhaps the most successful, the most celebrated, the most beloved popular song ever written. It's a song heard for the very first time on Christmas 1941, just 18 days after Pearl Harbor stunned and terrified and horrified all of America. That was the Christmas in 1941 that Bing Crosby first performed White Christmas, brand new song written for him by Irving Berlin. He performed it on the Kraft Music Hall live, his NBC radio show. It dazzled the nation. Amazingly enough, that first historic performance wasn't recorded. Nobody has a tape of it. It wasn't recorded. It was Voices in the Wind. Bing actually recorded the song on May 29, 1942. It was written for a film, and the film was called Holiday Inn. The whole idea of the film, if you've seen it, and it's a very entertaining movie with Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire, is they play two guys who operate an inn, a vacation inn, that's only open on major holidays. And the idea was that Irving Berlin is going to write different songs for each of those major holidays. Berlin had a really tough time writing the song for Christmas season, because he was a Jewish guy. He was actually the son of a cantor. He was an immigrant from Russia. His real name was Yisrael Balin. And Irving Berlin thought, what am I going to do for a Christmas song? What he did is he went with his gut and wrote this song, the music and the words, making an indelible impression. When he played it for the very first time for Bing Crosby, Bing Crosby knew that they would have a hit. Of course, nobody suspected it would be as big a hit as it was. Nobody performs, Bing Crosby never did, the first introductory section of the song that includes the words, "The sun is shining, the grass is green, the orange and palm trees sway, I've never seen such a day, in Beverly Hills, L.A., but it's December the 24th, and I'm longing to be up north. Those words seem almost trivial for a song that touches something so deep in so many people, and it certainly touched people in the midst of World War II. The timing of the song, performed first right after Pearl Harbor, and then Holiday Inn, the movie, which also became a big hit, was released for the next Christmas of 1942. America had millions of boys fighting all over the world. They listened to White Christmas and it brought tears to their eyes. Whenever Bing Crosby sang for the troops and he traveled around the world during the war, he was always asked to sing White Christmas. It sold some 30 million copies. Amazing. The success of the song led eventually to a movie based on the song. That movie was called White Christmas. It was released in 1954. It was supposed to team Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire once again. Fred Astaire read the script. He didn't like it. Donald O'Connor played in that movie. Holiday Inn remains a classic. The song remains classic. And it also captures one of the aspects of Christmas. Remains, by the way, probably the best-selling song of all time. Some people say that the Elton John version of Candle in the Wind in honor of Princess Diana sold even more copies. But White Christmas talks about dreaming of a white Christmas just like the ones I used to know. Well, Irving Berlin, probably back in Russia, didn't know a lot of white Christmases. He probably didn't even know a lot of very festive Hanukkahs. The yearning, the nostalgia in the song is for a lost world that may or may not have existed. And a lot of the material that people respond to at Christmas time is about that. When Washington Irving started writing in Knickerbocker's History of New York, writing about the old Dutch Santa Claus, that was probably prettied up a little bit and a little bit exaggerated. Jingle Bells touches on the same nostalgia. Silent Night, the same nostalgic feeling. Almost this yearning for something simple, secure, childlike. It's a great part of what people feel at Christmas time. Perhaps that's only profoundly appropriate when you begin to consider what the deeper messages of Christmas really are. When you look for the hope that all your days should be merry and bright. Some other works of popular culture, including the two most celebrated Christmas movies of all time, touch on similar themes. We'll talk about those movies and why they work so well coming right up.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. The mainstream media reflexively praised the civil unrest afflicting major cities across the country using the term peaceful protest, without even acknowledging that the phrase is an obvious contradiction in terms. A picnic can be peaceful, a yoga conclave can be peaceful, but a protest cannot. Its very purpose is disturbing the peace, shattering calm and complacency, heightening tension and conflict, not resolving it. Dictionary definitions for the word peaceful are, number one, peaceable, and number two, untroubled by conflict, agitation, or commotion, quiet, tranquil, end quote. Now, there's nothing quiet or tranquil about what's going on today. Yes, protests can be nonviolent. Dr. King and the late John Lewis always stressed nonviolence, even in the face of violent provocation. But the current demonstrations emphasize no positive goals or programs of reform, amounting only to angry expressions of unfocused rage. Naturally, there's nothing peaceful in this process. A process which, in most cases, leads inevitably to violent destruction. I'm Michael Medved.
The Secret History of the Christmas Holiday. That's the title of this special broadcast for the holiday season of the Michael Medved Show. We were speaking before about the great song White Christmas by the great American composer Irving Berlin, who wrote another enormous contribution to American morale during World War II. It's called God Bless America. And what's fascinating about that is that Irving Berlin, understanding the importance of that song, always dictated that any proceeds, and there were millions of dollars made from the copyright of God Bless America, would go directly to his favorite charity. was called the Boy Scouts of America. And isn't that interesting that another composer greatly associated with Christmas, Berlin associated with Christmas because he wrote White Christmas, is George Friedrich Handel, the composer of Messiah, who also understood the deeper importance of Messiah and decreed in his will that forever and forever and forever, all of the proceeds from his having written Messiah, the ultimate Christmas musical contribution, would go to benefit an orphanage, a foundling hospital in London. Beautiful stuff. Meanwhile, part of the theme of White Christmas is that yearning, that longing for something simpler, for something purer, for something more childlike. It's part of the birthright of Christmas, if you will, of the Christmas holiday. And that's also part of the two most famous Christmas movies of all time, both of which came at a time in American history when people were definitely yearning for a bit more simplicity, a desire to get back to normal, right after the tremendous suffering and sacrifice of World War II. In 1946, Frank Capra came back to Hollywood after having served in the U.S. Army and created the most famous pro-American propaganda series, Why We Fight. He served 5 years in the Army creating that material and left his career behind. He worked in the past on Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and other movies with a guy named Jimmy Stewart, who when he left Hollywood in 1942 was a number one star. He flew bombing missions as an Army Air Corps officer in Europe. But by the time he came back, he was worried that his career was ruined because everyone in America had forgotten about him. So the two of them worked together on this project that had been inspired by a story. Capra read the story about a guy who basically thought his life was a failure, but then when he was on the verge of suicide, he realizes how different the world would be without him. Capra loved the story. It had been written originally as a Christmas card by Philip Van Doren Stern. The script had been developed first for Cary Grant. He wasn't interested. And then when Capra took over the movie and brought Jimmy Stewart on board, Capra wanted his favorite leading lady, Jean Arthur, to play the female lead. She declined, and he called on Donna Reed. And the rest is movie history. Okay, it's winter time, and that shouldn't stop you from going outdoors and enjoying yourself and getting some exercise. Relief Factor can help with that cause. Relief Factor is natural. It consists of fish oil and turmeric primarily and other ingredients that have been tested and shown to be remarkably effective. Relief Factor can make you feel better and give you an opportunity to enjoy all kinds of aspects of an active life that you may have been prevented from enjoying in the past. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner. There's a special price available for what is called a quick start with Relief Factor. You take these tablets, which are entirely natural, no chemicals, no preservatives of any kind. This is a wonderful product that we heartily endorse. Go to michaelmedved.com, look for the banner for Relief Factor. Some of America's most important principles, like freedom of conscience, speech, rule of law, sanctity and dignity of human life, the family, and economic freedom, are under contemporary assault. It's more important than ever to teach our nation's traditional values and timeless principles. Now, these sometimes forgotten values must be remembered and communicated, and the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College exists to accomplish just that. The Institute promotes these principles to the next generation of leaders on campus and across the country. Go to the website faithandfreedom.com and you'll find online courses on Ronald Reagan and James Madison, and above all, a vigorous defense of Western civilization and its highest values. Advocating for these timeless principles is why Grove City College continues to be a beacon in higher education. Go to faithandfreedom.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Secret History of Christmas. For more history shows, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
It's a Wonderful Life was an expensive movie to make. Capra spent a good deal of money on snow, on getting the look of Bedford Falls just right. And it was considered a flop, commercial flop. It didn't earn back its money. And in fact, a number of the leading critics, like The New Yorker magazine, basically sniffed at the movie. The New Yorker wrote, "Practically all the actors involved behave as cutely as pixies. Wonderful Life is so mincing as to border on baby talk." Well, there's that childlike purity again. The movie is pure. It's beautiful. For many people, including Steven Spielberg, apparently, it represents the ultimate cinematic expression. With a conclusion, Jimmy Stewart holding his youngest daughter and holding Donna Reed and staring at people singing around his Christmas tree, a conclusion that can always bring tears to the eyes.
Look, Daddy, teacher says, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right. That's right.
Attaboy Clarence and attaboy Frank Capra, the great Sicilian immigrant, and I think the greatest director, filmmaker ever produced by Hollywood. Now, the next Hollywood classic for Christmas came the very next year, and it also has that nostalgic yearning to it, that tug to it, and it also was not a gigantic hit when it came out. It's called Miracle on 34th Street. It was called at one point The Big Heart. It's a film that a lot of people were afraid of. They didn't know what to make of it. It did get nominated for Oscars. It won an Academy Award for Edmund Gwenn, playing Kris Kringle. But the whole idea of belief, of faith, of an old guy who actually is convinced that he is Santa Claus, touches a chord to this day.
For the past 50 years or so, I've been getting more and more worried about Christmas. Seems we're all so busy trying to beat the other fellow and making things go faster and look shinier and cost less that Christmas and I are sort of getting lost in the shuffle.
Oh, I don't think so. Christmas is still Christmas.
Oh, Christmas isn't just a day. It's a frame of mind. And that's what's been changing. That's why I'm glad I'm here. Maybe I can do something about it.
Well, there was very little faith in this movie from 20th Century Fox. In fact, so little faith that 20th Century Fox released it in July rather than in December. But the film has continued to build in popularity. Part of the secret of the popularity of It's a Wonderful Life, by the way, is that it was such a flop that they let the copyright lapse in the 1970s. Nobody owned the copyright. So they could show it on TV over and over and over and over again without having to pay anybody. And that's when it really achieved the classic status that it deserves and that it has to this day. One of the interesting aspects of Miracle on 34th Street, of course, is it's about department stores. It's about commerce to some extent. And that entire connection is a connection that Americans ought to feel more comfortable with, it seems to me. Because part of what is beautiful about the Christmas season is people running around investing money. Some surveys say that the average American family spends 4% of its yearly income just on Christmas celebration and Christmas gifts. And you could say, well, what a waste. No, it's not a waste. What you're doing is, first of all, making the economy go. We spend more at Christmas time than the entire national product of Ireland, say. But it also is people who are galvanized because of their connection with other people. Some kind of building up of a sense of community. Even Congress moved Thanksgiving in 1939, moved it from the last Thursday in November to the fourth Thursday in November to make sure you had a four-week Christmas season. Commerce was that important. And it was important to Charles Dickens, too, author of the ultimate Christmas classic. We'll talk about it coming up. This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. With names changing on public buildings and statues coming down almost everywhere, the cancel culture now also wants to remake our money. A full page in the New York Times proposed new faces for our coins and bills, emphasizing diversity and artistic achievement, not political leadership. They wanted Marsha P. Johnson, a self-described black drag queen and activist, for the $10 bill, with Wilma Mankiller, first female chief of the Cherokee Nation, for the $5 bill. More than 50 other historical figures also received consideration, with white males mentioned only if they were gay or leftist radicals. This meant no Mark Twain, no Frank Lloyd Wright, no Frank Capra, no George Gershwin, and so forth. In fact, reviewing the Times list reveals an inconvenient truth. In the arts, as in government, the American tradition has been shaped most importantly, though hardly exclusively, by males of European ancestry. Pretending otherwise counts as both ignorant and dishonest. I'm Michael Medved. Special edition of the Michael Medved Show, the secret history of the Christmas holiday could never be complete without some reference to the greatest work of art ever inspired by Christmas. I mean, of course, Charles Dickens' short novel, A Christmas Carol. He wrote it because he needed to, because he was broke. He was approaching Christmas in 1843. He was hard at work on a bigger novel, Martin Chuzzlewit, based in part on his visit to America the year before. And according to some sources, it was that visit to America that inspired his interest in Christmas. He wasn't a formally religious guy. He had critical things to say about organized religion, but he loved the fellowship, the festivity, the joy, the family feeling of Christmas, and he needed money for his family. And he had the idea that writing this book, which he wrote all at once in a blaze of inspiration in 6 weeks, would take care of his financial needs. And it was a smash hit. It sold 6,000 copies, which was a lot of copies in the Christmas season in 1843. But Dickens only got a royalties check of £250. He had been hoping for £1,000. It cost a lot to produce A Christmas Carol and to produce it in a hurry. Some of the aspects of this particular novel are widely misunderstood. Lots of people think that A Christmas Carol is some kind of a lefty message. Well, it's not. It's a piece about compassion and about fellow feeling. But when Ebenezer Scrooge changes because of the visitations of the different spirits, he doesn't change and leave his business and say, oh, now I'm going to go into social work or I'm going to go into social agitation. He continues to run his business because that's important. He just pays his employees more and gives more to charity. It is a book about personal transformation, not about some kind of social transformation. It's a book about people changing themselves. That's what Dickens believed in. He also believed in making or trying to make a decent profit from the book. It killed him that there were so many pirated editions and pirated plays based on A Christmas Carol, particularly in America. And he actually launched a lawsuit and won the lawsuit against some of the pirates who had stolen A Christmas Carol. But then after he won, they declared bankruptcy. He tried to pursue it. He ended up losing £700 trying to just chase down some of the royalties on this great, great work. The work, in a sense, recalls his own poor childhood. His father had been in debtor's prison. He had six children in his family growing up, just like the Cratchit family in the novel. And his youngest sickly brother was called Tiny Fred, like Tiny Tim, the unforgettable character in the novel. And the whole theme of the novel is the transformation of Ebenezer Scrooge, who became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. He became that kind of good man because of the power to change himself. And let me conclude, as the Cratchit family might say on this occasion,
and a Merry Christmas to us.
A Merry Christmas to
us. And God bless us, everyone.
Upward and onward.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. During the period of home isolation, I've looked more deeply into messages in the traditional prayers I recite every morning. For instance, a key passage in ancient Jewish liturgy is the Yishtabach, or the God be praised prayer. It concludes by hailing, quote, the God of thanksgivings, Master of Wonders, who chooses melodious songs. Now, this should remind us that music, with its mysterious power to stir souls, is a divine gift, but also that not all music is created equal. We praise God not for creating music, humans do that, but for choosing the right songs. So what music would God choose? I'd assume heaven would select enduring achievements of the last 300 years, possessing depth and spirituality, rather than superficial yelps that may prove popular but fleeting. God's playlist more likely features Bach and Mozart over hip-hop or techno-pop. That meaningful choice could help all of us endure this devastating interruption in...
Hi, Fred Dwyer here. If you suffer from a serious chronic illness, heartburn, poor sleep, fatigue, brain fog, you need Balance 7. Balance 7 water improves the acid-alkaline balance in the body. The right pH helps unlock the immune system. It also allows for better hydration and nourishment during times of medication and stress. Balance 7 works. I know. I use it every day. Now you can try it free. Balance 7 is offering chronic illness sufferers a free gallon of Balance 7 water for the first 100 callers. That's an $87 value free. So call 800-793-9039 and mention my name, Fred. The first 100 callers suffering with a chronic illness get a free gallon of Balance 7 water. So call 800-793-9039, code word Fred, or visit balance7.com. That's balance, the number 7.com. 800-793-9039, code word Fred.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be just like Cal Ripken. It's definitely humbling to know that now people are calling me a hero. Instead of finding the IED with my metal detector, the IED found me first, and that resulted in double above-knee amputations. It's hard to describe the feeling of meeting somebody that you've always wanted to be like. There are people now that are looking up to you for their inspiration and to be their role model.
Visit saluteheroes.org to learn more.